secondly, a question for you. Do you think he's done some work on Isaiah?
Whoa!
That's, where's he pulling this stuff from? And the scary thing is I can't tell if he's making it up or not. It's just as well. That's right. That's right. That's right. John 2, interesting contrast as I was listening to Dr. Bartelt. It's in Isaiah 62, there's lots of glory and light, but it belongs to the people,
yeah.
Right? John 2, it hasn't gotten that far yet. It's the glory of Jesus. He manifests his glory at the wedding of Cana, the first Simeon, the first sign. So in a sense, it's a little bit of a different emphasis there, a more singular focus upon the true bridegroom himself. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But still definitely epiphany, right, and manifestation and so forth. let's just kind of read through verses 1 to 11 first and then kind of back up and try to make some comments try at least to grasp some of the potential profundity of this text. Start with a nice dative of time when. It's just ordinary dative. And on the third day, agamos, a wedding feast, happened. Aorist indicative middle deponent of ginomai. A wedding feast happened in Cana of Galilee. This is pretty, you know, straightforward Johannine prose. It's not too hard. Kai ein, the imperfect of ami, and the mother of Jesus was a k adverb there. Okay? By the way, interestingly enough, the mother of Jesus, we'll come back to this, appears specifically in John's gospel only in two pericopes. She's only in two places. I mean, she's mentioned one other time. She's here, and she's where? At the cross. Only place Mary appears. Verse 2, and also Jesus was called, or invited, and his disciples into the gaman, into the feast. Verse 3, now we have a genitive absolute. Hystereo means to lack, to fail. And the wine having failed, or when the wine had run out, a common historical present happens all over the New Testament in the Gospels and Acts. The mother of Jesus, lege, says, prosaton to him, uch ekuzin oinon, they do not have wine. Now this next is a good example of something that you see a lot in the Gospel of John, where people seem to say innocent things to Jesus, and he seems to overreact almost. It's like, and it's because he's really the only one who knows what's going on. I mean, he's the only one who really knows the import of what the person is saying. Or, you know, Mary, you know, in her own head, probably, I don't know what she means by this. We can't really tell. But Jesus, surprisingly, verse 4, and Jesus says to her, Te emoi kai soi gynai. Now, gynai is not particularly offensive or something like this, although it is a little unusual to call your mother woman, right? But it's not necessarily woman or something like that. But the te emoi kai soi is a little unusual. And you can check this out. The phrase or similar phrases actually occurs at different places in the New Testament. The one I referenced this morning, getting ready, is Mark 1:24, where the demons say to Jesus, what to us and you? So in other words, however you take this, it's a distancing comment, right? Jesus is distancing himself. It's not like he's yelling at Mary or something like that. That would probably be too strong. But it's like he's putting up his hands and he's going, back up here. He's pushing her away, right? What do you have to do with me? Or something like that. Some sort of a paraphrase like that would catch it. But again, it's definitely a distancing. And then Jesus explains why. Again, it seems somewhat abrupt, but he's the one who knows what's going on. Is she perhaps asking for him to show publicly, you know, who he is and what he can do? Well, it's not altogether clear from the text, but what Jesus does say is, upo heike hehoramu, my hour, excuse me, has not yet come near. See? Now, this is loaded in John. You get this a number of times in John. His hour had not yet come. They tried to kill him, but they didn't do it because his hour had not yet come. And it doesn't happen until chapter 12, verse 23, where Jesus says, "My hour has come," and he begins to speak of his death, and then we go to upper room and to glory, and we'll come back to that in just a second. So significantly, here in what the evangelist later on calls the first of his Simea, he says, "My hour has not yet come." So we've got a link. We'll come back to that. The mother of him says, verse 5, to the servants. Here we have a conditional relative clause. Ha is the relative pronoun, and an makes it, you know, conditional. So whatever, lege, he says, a present subjunctive of lege, of lego, for whatever he says to you, poieseta, do. Okay. In a sense, to her credit, you know, Mary is, she's submissive. She doesn't get in a huff and go bake something. You know, she hangs in there and she says to the servant, whatever he says, do. So it does show a faith and a positive thing in that regard. So you can't be too hard on Mary in this text. Now, eison de ake lethinai hydriai hex katatan katharisman ton eudaion ke menai. I would probably link that participle, ke menai, in the middle of the second line with eison and sort of make it a periphrastic construction, even though it's far away. So there were lying there six stone water pots according to the cleansing of the Jews. They're for a cultic cleansing purpose. Okay? John specifically tells us that. Chorusai, another participle from choreo, which means to, it can, among other things, to contain, to hold. Holding, or able to hold, ana, up to, or about, metretas hydrias hydatas. Six measures of water. This is about one of these, a metretas is 8 to 9 gallons. Okay, so there's six of them, and they hold, we go on to read, 2 or 3. Oh, I skipped a line. Dua he tres. 2 or 3. So if you go with 9 gallons, each one of these can hold 25 to 35 gallons of water. Okay, so that's a pretty big jug, you know. It's like a, what? Yeah, that's right. It's a keg. Yeah, it's the size of a beer keg. Okay, that's right. Good Lutheran exegesis. That's right. Leave it to Widger. That's right. Thank you, Don. Glad to see you're continuing your theological studies. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's how big they are. That's right. And there are six of these babies, right? Or, to pick up on the Mary thing, six of these mamas, right? That was a joke. And Jesus says to them, now I have to say this because Dr. Bartelt is right here on my right. We have a genitive of content.
Oh.
He hates this. He hates this. He says, gemisita, fill the water pots of water. I mean, that's just the way Greek does it. You fill something with the genitive, of water. So I thought I'd stick the knife in his back and twist it a little bit. You bet, right. And they filled them until above, all the way to the top, right? Verse 8. And he says to them, antlesata, antlao means to draw, like in John 4, to draw water out of the well. Okay? So draw now and carry to the host of the feast, the maitre d', the architriclino. And they brought. We move from Pharaoh to Enenkan, the third principal part of Pharaoh, verse 8, verse 9. Hos is often comparative, but is also temporal. So not as, but when. And when the maitre d' tasted, from guomai, the water, and we'll go ahead and take this participle in a kind of an adjectival sense, even though it's not strictly speaking an attributive position. The chief reason probably is just because it's a perfect participle passive. And just attach it closely to wine. The water, the having become wine, water. And he, the maitre d', did not know. This is actually the pluperfect of in form of oida. But you remember that oida has a present meaning, and so the pluperfect will have a past time, perhaps an imperfect meaning. And he was not knowing whence it was. Indirect discourse, preserving the original tense, estin, you bump it one step back in time, whence it was. But, John interrupts in a sense himself, the servants knew who had drawn the water resume the narrative. He calls the bridegroom. Oh, the maitre d' calls the bridegroom, verse 10, and says to him, every guy first the noble wine puts, and whenever they have become drunk, this is from methusko, and in the passive it means to be drunk, to become drunk. Now you have to understand the verb again. He puts the, elasso is the comparative of mikros, oddly enough, small, smaller. So from that we get lesser, from that we get inferior, okay? And, you know, there isn't any real evidence, apparently, that this is, a designated practice at, feasts. It's just the kind of thing that people do. If you know you're not going to have enough of the really good stuff to satisfy everybody all the time, you give them that stuff first. And then after a while, you don't notice so much, see? And he says, this is what people do. This is the normal way it happens. But this isn't normal. Get it? This isn't normal. You have kept the noble wine, the good wine, until now. And then the evangelist finishes with verse 11. This, emphatic first position, this beginning of signs, Jesus poieot, he did in Cana of Galilee, framing the text. We had Cana of Galilee in verse 1, Cana of Galilee in verse 11. And now this is what really, sort of drags us back into the text and asks us to do some heavy-duty interpretation here. And it doesn't say he showed his compassion. It doesn't say he helped out, a couple in Cana and saved them from embarrassment. It says he manifested his glory. These are huge words in John. He manifested his glory, and his disciples believed, the typical Johannine idiom, believed into him or believed in him. Now, what in the world can we do with the wedding of Cana? Well, you can almost do anything you want with it. But let me make some suggestions. First of all, there are some features in this text that really invite us to interpret it theologically. I mean, you're not just kind of futzing around if you do that. For instance, the unexpected way that Jesus responds to his mother, right? She thinks this isn't maybe a more ordinary incident. He distances himself from her and says, my hour. And he's talking about the hour of his passion. That's what his hour is. Now, does she have this in mind? Probably not. See, my hour has not yet come. And by the way, it's at that hour that Jesus fully manifests his glory. So we've got hour and we've got glory. Jesus is doing something here that really means something, and it points forward to that hour. Dr. Schuchard, whom some of you have not really had a chance to get to know yet, is a Johannine specialist, which is, I actually rather wish he were here. He likes to say it this way, that all the signs, the semeia in John, are cruciform. They're all, in one way or another, shaped like a cross. See, they all anticipate in some way the great hour, the great manifestation of Jesus' glory. And the evangelist is very emphatic. This is going to manifest Jesus' glory, but it's not his hour, but it's going to begin now to point this beginning of signs with the crucifixion, the death and resurrection of Jesus being the culmination, the goal, the fulfillment of the signs. So it's the Jesus' response to his mother. The fact that this is, not the way banquets are carried out. The maitre d' says to the bridegroom, this isn't, what is this? This isn't the way people do things. Something new is happening here. Plus, he makes, the Wagerian observation, a ton of wine. He makes a lot, and he uses vessels for a new purpose. Vessels which were specifically reserved for the cleansing, it's not specified, we don't really know which one, some sort of ritual, ceremonial cleansing. And you can link that with the whole, the theme over and over again in John, that Jesus doesn't cancel out or in any way really denigrate the Jewish festivals and feasts, but rather he fulfills them. And the next place we get this is right here in John 2, where Jesus, cleanses, quote-unquote, cleanses the temple, and then he says, destroy this temple, and he's speaking of the temple of his body, right? So we got a lot of invitations here to really theologically interpret the wedding of Cana. And so maybe, just maybe, oh, here's another thing. I learned this just this morning when I was kind of working around in this, and Dr. Bartelt knows this already probably by heart. Amos 9, when the Messiah comes, you have an abundance of wine. See, the mountains will drip with sweet wine. See, and some other stuff in the intertestamental literature. So we've got water cleansing. That was good. That was good, right? Okay. But now we've got new wine and celebration overflowing, right? A cleansing ceremony has become a banquet, right? And I wonder, who is the maitre d' really talking to? He says, you, O bridegroom, have kept... Yeah, exactly. You start going like this. You have kept the... Except that bridegroom didn't keep the good wine until now. It's the real bridegroom who kept the good wine until now. So, and he manifests his glory. He pours out in an, again, maybe this is the connection, in an unexpected, right? Unpredicted, unanticipated way, he pours out the fullness of good wine, showing himself to be the bridegroom, this first of banquets, pointing to the time when the hour of his glory will come and he'll pour out his glory in an unexpected and paradoxical and cruciform manner. And to quote my predecessor, if you can't preach that, you need a brain transplant. And it's time to go. Any questions?
Could you...
Yeah.
Could you, I mean, would it be too bold in your presence to suggest
in that, my presence?
That the good wine comes at the end, and that sort of backwards reversal indicates sort of that, dare I say, eschatological
yeah.
motif,
right.
That the best always comes at the end.
Sure, I think yeah. so. Yep.
Kind
yep.
of struck me. Somebody
yeah.
else had a comment.
Yeah. 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 Stuart? Talk loud.
Spoke to his mother.
Yes.
His point. What is the purpose of putting what he said then to how the response is? When Jesus says to his mother,
yeah,
my hour has not come.
Right, right.
What is the story here? What's yeah. Why is it at this position that he says this?
Because this is the first miracle. And all of his miracles are anticipations and leading up to the greatest and last miracle, right? The greatest
uh-huh.
and last sign.
Okay.
Now, Mary doesn't know this. See, that's why it seems so abrupt. See, Jesus knows what he's going to do. So she says, do something. And he just wants to make it clear that he's running the show and the big tent is not set up yet.
Okay.